Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Warning, this podcast contains things you just can't unhear.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Pastor Oil, the new Christian emetic laxative. Did a spiteful atheist waiter trick you into eating something banned in the Bible? Can't decide between emergency diarrhea and emergency vomit? Well, we'll give you both, right away and violently. We're the Plan B of religious culinary law. Pastor Oil. For the last time, it's not a lube, damn it. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
I don't get why you need to say this stuff, because you know it's not true.
Listen, I've been criticized for having folks come on my show talking about the power of prayer.
You don't have to buy prayer.
It's hard to buy prayer. That's the difference.
Prayer's free.
Yes, prayer's free. And people, that's a very good point.
Hey, y'all, I'm Bobby.
And I'm Ashley.
And we are No Religion Required.
That probably would have helped if I would have helped you say that, huh?
That would have probably helped. But hey, Miss Ashley, let me ask you a question. If we all came from monkeys, why are there still monkeys? Explain that to me, Miss Smarty Pants.
Oh, Bobby, you could be such an ass sometimes. Anyone with a brain in their head knows that we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
It's Thursday.
It's June 26th.
And if the USA and Germany tie, they both win.
Interesting. Should be like chess. They should be able to offer a draw. I'm No Illusions.
Me then, right. And from Spacious Waterfront Studio, New York, New York.
And Van Down by the River, Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, we'll ask, what the fuck is Baha'i?
We'll learn yet another reason to never visit Kenya.
And David from My Book of Mormon joins us to assure you that the second M is not a typo.
But first, the diatribe. Dan Finke came on last week and reminded me not to call religious people stupid, and I do need to be reminded of that. Now, on a side note, I should say that there's a ton of shit that Dan had to say that some of our listeners took objection to, and hopefully we can get him back on sometime to air a few of those grievances, but that's way too big a subject for this diatribe, so I'm just going to stick with the stupid thing for now. Because Dan's right. We shouldn't call religious people stupid. Now, let me defend that really quickly. Ultimately, I'm not convinced by the assertion that stupid is a bully word, because I don't give a shit. If something's stupid, I'm going to call it stupid. I was bullied out of the Santa Claus myth the same way, and so far that's stuck, so it's not all bad. I'm also not convinced by the assertion that it makes communication less effective. You know, pissing people off sometimes makes your message stick a little deeper, and even an effort to prove you wrong is a win in this fight. Plus, if I was obsessed with effective means of communication, I probably wouldn't make jokes about eating aborted fetuses. Now, the point that he made that did convince me, though, is the fact that it's simply false. Religious people aren't stupid. Religion is stupid, sure. All the little fables in the Bible are stupid. The claim that Jesus cleared you a parking space is stupid. The claim that the earth is 6,000 years old is stupid, and I will call them stupid. But the people who hold many of these beliefs don't have to be stupid to do so. It's like Dan said, trusting your parents and the community around you is more often going to lead you to wisdom than stupidity. That's the right thing to do most of the time. You can't blame an indoctrinated person for their indoctrination any more than you can blame a rape victim for their rape. So perhaps we shouldn't call the religious people stupid. Now, don't get me wrong, I'll need to be reminded of this a time or two before I break the habit and start showing those stupid motherfuckers the respect they deserve, but it's something I should probably work on. And if there's anybody out there and they're going like, don't do it, Noah, don't turn the scathing atheist into some politically correct, can't we all just get along, kumbaya and puppy dog tales, accommodationist bullshit, don't worry, I'm not motivated by being nice. And I'm not even necessarily motivated by being accurate. My motivation here is tactical. See, when we call our opponents stupid, we run the risk of believing that they're stupid. And if we do that, we run the risk of underestimating them. We label them stupid, and we're playing right into their hands. Clearly, they want us to think they're stupid. Pretending to be stupid might be the most common debate tactic they employ. Think about it. Have you ever been arguing with a Christian and the reliability of faith comes up? They'll almost always counter with something like, well, you have faith in your wife, don't you? Now, you would have to be a Boo Radley-level idiot not to see the difference between these two things. My wife is a tangible, measurable phenomenon whose existence I can prove to any reasonable standard. What's more, I don't have faith in my wife. I have trust in my wife based on observable behavior. You know, if suddenly she had to work a bunch of 1 a.m. shifts that required her to bring a riding crop and a ball gag, I'd lose my faith damn quick. Clearly, we're talking about different meanings of the word faith, and obviously they know that. You know, if you want to see a master at the pretending to be stupid strategy, look no further than Ray Banana Man Comfort. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this guy's not stupid. I'm sure he's really stupid, but he's not as dumb as he pretends to be. Watch any debate he's ever done. His whole shtick is pretending to not understand things, no matter how simply they're explained to him. You can watch his opponents break down speciation to a level a brain-damaged parakeet would comprehend, and he'll just say, pudding is my favoritist. And even when he is cornered into admitting that, yes, he understands why evolution doesn't lead to crocoducks, that's not going to stop him from using the same stupid argument in the next debate. If he was that stupid, he would have to have wiping instructions tattooed backwards across his forehead. But it's a damn good debate strategy. If you refuse to understand what your opponent's saying, you can also refuse to understand when you've lost. Hell, this is even their legal defense from time to time. Sometimes they're just too stupid to know that raping kids is against the law. We cannot afford to grant them that concession. We're never going to win this fight if we don't admit what we're up against. And if it was the army of drooling fuckwits we often portray them to be, we'd already have won. If we want to truly sway this world away from religion, we need to fully understand how smart people fall victim to their cognitive biases. We need to explore the true root of these stupid beliefs within these intelligent people. And we need to admit the true power and nature of motivated stupidity.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is a man only three miracles away from sainthood, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to cure the blind?
How about the dumb instead?
That's a start.
Like Annie Sullivan. In our lead story tonight, in Turning the Other Cheek Toward a Rapist News, a.k.a. Mouth to Ass News, a recent investigation spoke to several former Bob Jones University students and revealed that the school policy on counseling sexual assault victims goes something like this. God sent you a rapist for a reason, so you're not getting into heaven unless you call this guy back and apologize for your role in the whole mess and whatever you did wrong. You must have done something wrong. Check Leviticus. It's almost always Leviticus in our experience.
We're also required to inform you that there's a few shekels in it for you if you marry this guy. So it's not too late to salvage this thing. That's all I'm saying. Fuck.
So the abuse counseling procedures at BJU have been called into question by, among others, Katie Landry, who described reporting a rape to the dean of students, at which point he responded, quote, well, there's always a sin under other sin. There's a root sin. We have to find the sin in your life that caused your rape, end quote.
What?
At that point, Landry obviously realized she was alone in an office with a man who just took the rapist's side of the argument,
right.
So she correctly ran away in terror.
Now, tell me all about the rape in detail, and I'll just have my hands under the desk here in case I have to text or something. You don't have to pay attention to what they're doing there or the look on my face.
Just now, very understandably, after being asked, did you consider just consenting to avoid this whole mess? And then being told to repent for being an enabler, Landry appears to have abandoned the clearly broken Christianity platform on all this.
Good.
She now actually lives in New Orleans, where she started a business that provides tours of historic madams and brothels. So, you know, place where you pay for sex as part of a mutually beneficial transaction, like civilized people.
There you go. Bob Jones University, making prostitution look good by comparison since 1927.
Whorehouse 1, Bible 0. Who's keeping score? Nobody's keeping
Speaking
score.
Of which,
I am.
From the biblical penetration file, it turns out that Ricky Wagner is such a pathetic bastard that he even gets his ass kicked in his delusions of grandeur. You might
yeah,
recall
really badly.
It's an amazing fucking story. Now, you might recall this little flurry of feel-good news from back in February about a Dayton, Ohio bus driver who was allegedly attacked by three scary black men whose attempts to shoot him dead were thwarted by the Bible he had in his chest pocket. Well, as it turns out, much like the book that supposedly saved him, the event was a bunch of poorly fabricated bullshit that doesn't stand up to even a cursory investigation.
So what actually happened? The Bible and the gun were in his sweatpants, and he shot himself like Plaxico. I mean, his nonsense
way
story that obviously
worse,
didn't happen.
Dude. It's actually way worse than that because it was all intentional. All right, so let's examine the holes in Wagner's story before we examine the holes in his body. First of all, Bible or no, there is no way that this guy's moobs are penetrable to a 22 caliber bullet. This dude is 320 pounds, and somehow he wasn't at all winded in the 911 call he made immediately after the alleged attack. In addition,
he's not one of those really fit bus drivers.
No. It wasn't raw muscle, no. In addition, the stab wounds on his arms and legs suggested to experts that they were self-inflicted, as did the one bullet wound that got past his Bible.
So this guy's a cutter and a shooter?
Right.
What? Somebody please pay attention to Ricky Wagner already? Wow, this guy literally brought a gun to a knife fight and lost. To himself, because he also brought a knife to a gunfight against himself. Somebody just say hi or ask him a question about large vehicles, obesity, anything. Just
anything at all.
Involve him.
Now, the silver lining of this story has to be that it provides possibly my all-time favorite mental image. After, think about this, you got this lumbering land walrus who has just stabbed and shot himself. He then sets his Bible down on the street, shoots it twice. Imagine you're looking out the window and seeing this. Bends over, he picks it up, puts it back in his pocket, and calls the cops.
Holding it between his toes. This would be fine.
Now, to his credit, though, I have to say that is exactly the sequence of events that I wanted to do during the Proverbs reading. So I could understand if that's what drove him to it. Apparently it's not, but there is a reason to do that.
And in a follow-up to a story from last year from the Swine and Cheese File, you may remember when we reported on an Edinburgh mosque that had to call in the hazmat team after Scottish racist assholes Chelsea Lambie and Douglas Cruikshank, who I've been assured by a lot of people are definitely not funny, despite my instincts on this. They attacked the house of worship with salted pig strips and obviously got in some trouble for it. Well, their sentences were just handed down. Lambie will go to prison for a year, and Cruikshank, who didn't laugh at the hearing when the judge said breakfast meat, will only get 9 months. So, showed some
clearly
restraint.
I'd have gotten the year right there. Now, I'm kind of torn on this one because breakfast on the one meat. Hand, this is undeniably, it's vandalism motivated by racism. But on the other hand, people were just put in jail for malicious use of bacon.
That happened, yeah.
It seems like somebody just got in trouble for groping someone's aura. They probably
exactly.
shouldn't have been in your hand there, but...
So, I mean, like, they should definitely be punished, okay? Especially since it's... Well, are we even sure on this? It's not funny?
I think we're kind of sure.
Okay, so it wasn't quite funny enough, I guess.
There you go.
But I'm wondering, how's the law going to work on this in the future? If it was like turkey bacon, would they just have gotten a vandalism ticket? Like, can you get in trouble for brandishing a side order? How does that work? What about bluffing? Like, stand back unless you want to find out what kind of fried rice this is. Do I look like a shrimp guy? Do you feel lucky, you bastard? Well, do you, punk? Come on.
We can solve this problem easy. Muslims just need a less ubiquitous kryptonite, you know, fried alligator strips. Those are harder to find, you know, something like that.
I'm picturing, like, Superman throwing, like, a little bit of bacon strips in their eye and getting away.
Bacon bits, yeah.
It's more of a Batman thing, either way.
Right. And in OK, but you guys are still stuck with Pope Innocent IV news, Christian musician and ineffective wife killer Tim Lambesis recently admitted that he was secretly an atheist the whole time. Having apparently recognized the inadequacies of both his faith and his musical talent at the same time, he simply continued to head the Christian band As I Lay Dying, whose most widely heard recording was the one where he asked an undercover FBI agent to murder his wife during a sting operation in April of last year.
Okay, but here's the part that confuses me. How does that sting operation work? did they get an anonymous tip? There was a lot of apostate band leaders hiring assassins at a particular bar? Like, what? Psst, buddy, kill your wife? Kill your wife? No? You? No? No? I thought you started to lean in for a second. All right, get out of here then. Just get out of here. If you're not
trying to work here. How far be it from me not to take a convicted felon who apparently dedicated his life to deceiving people for financial gain at his word. But after admitting to a career and telling Christians whatever they want to hear, I think he just went on to tell Christians whatever they want to hear. Right? I mean, they can't get behind a story of a prominent Christian trying to hire an assassin to kill his wife, but they can gobble up the story of a Christian turning to the dark side and immediately setting about exacting his murderous vengeance.
Because that's what
so, just a bet here, willing to put money on this. The rededication of his life to Jesus and the subsequent book deal are scheduled for release by Christmas of 2015. Willing, he beats the new Star Wars. That's my bet.
And in Ebonic Plague news, bitches be trippin' if they fin to bring they nasty smallpox kids into school. Sorry. New York City public schools recently faced a legal challenge to their very logical health policy that says something like, during a disease outbreak, unvaccinated children and rhesus monkeys with Ebola are not allowed to come in and help spread mass sickness on those days. They can, however, come in the next day if they're willing to take their autism shot, because we want all the kids in the country to be autistic. So that's helpful.
Who has that plan? This is such insane horseshit to me, though. So, first of all, we have parents who are refusing inexpensive and potentially life-saving medicine on behalf of their children. So, and not only does the state allow them to do that, but they even have the foresight to protect these kids from their parents' stupidity by keeping them home when the kids at the school have the diseases that they're not vaccinated against.
Sue them!
Right? What? Shouldn't you at least have to burn yourself with some fucking coffee first or something?
So, yeah, three anti-vax families, without the requisite crotch burns, decided to contest this policy for violating their religious right to freely exercise socially destructive stupidity. The case was decided last week at the Federal District Court in Brooklyn, where Judge William F. Kuntz II, despite being a douche for the Roman numeral thing, ruled in favor of less kids with diseases in public schools.
Controversial.
Upholding the right of the schools to act rationally on this one. So,
and not only that, but apparently he cited a 109-year-old Supreme Court precedent. So not only did it tell him to fuck off, but he said, like, we settled this shit in 1905, you asshole.
Yeah, when we decided you're not allowed to spread smallpox.
Right.
That's what that was about when we decided that. So, the free exercise violation claim, clearly nonsense. New York City public school attendance certainly isn't required by any holy books that I've ever heard of.
Forbidden by a few.
More practically, though, don't these kids have, like, rickets and shit? Anyway, are they even able to get to school if we let them? So, this is a moot point. Nobody wants the rickets kid in class anyway. It's awkward. Everybody, your mom makes you invite the rickets kid over.
It sucks. God, keep digging that hole. And in Can You Believe It news tonight, a group of Islamic militants in Kenya gave new meaning to the term final exam last week when 27 people were murdered for failing a door-to-door pop quiz about Islam. Apparently, several of them missed the very first question, which was, are you a Muslim? Others were killed for lacking detailed knowledge of the Quran, and still others just didn't have the number two pencil.
Trick question. There's only one true pencil.
Well, there you go.
Kill him.
Why do they even make
excuse
the
me, 1.5? Sir, you, yes, you, the only person for miles. I see you're clearly busy jogging with that herd of nomadic gazelles over there. But if I could just have a moment of your time, just a moment of your time. Me and these guys over here with AK-47s, we're big fans of Allah. What about you?
Right.
They put a mic in their face. 27 morons said they prefer Gozer the Gazarian or some other dumbass answer. When terrorists with guns ask you if you like the one true God, you say yes.
You say yes.
Very simple. You don't have to see that movie to know that.
Now, I know that this kind of sudden emphasis on book learning might seem disingenuous coming from a group of people who haven't passed a test since their moms pissed on that little stick, but one can't help but applaud their renewed emphasis on education. You know, if you think about it, a loaded rifle in your face will kick the fuck out of a gold star by your name any day of the week. So at least they got that.
Gold star is a little golden shower. That's how it all happens at the beginning. So the Tea Party And the homicidal militant Kenyan Muslims are on the same page, as it turns out. Teachers need way more guns.
Right.
That would solve everything. That would make it all better. Automatic
weapons. And on the other side of the aisle here, liberal apologists are already hard at work explaining how Western imperialism is the true culprit here, for which the international cabal of militant Muslim theocrats are genuinely appreciative. I should send them a card or something.
You're welcome. And in making it rain sulfur news, the nuns of St. Charles Borromeo in Stone Park, Illinois, have filed suit against Club Allure, a strip club that operates next door to their convent. They argue the club ruins their ability to collect dollars, will likely incur God's wrath, and also violates a state law against adult entertainment within 1,000 feet of a church or school, neither of which a convent is. So,
I swear, it's like these nuns just heard we needed a 30 seconds on the clock segment for this
they
week.
They must have, because this is fucking perfect.
Seriously, like, here's an idea. How about we just employ the one that has an issue with the other's existence has to move rule? Isn't that fair?
Not crazy.
It's the difference between burning a cross and just moving closer to the golf course.
White people are racist. In response to the allegations, a spokesman for the club may or may not have said the following thing. But we pay taxes, and aren't you considered a lesbian brothel by the state laws anyway? Well, regardless, you ladies are more than welcome to take a song on stage with a collection plate. So,
give a whole new meaning to selling indulgences there. It's way more moral than the other type of it, too.
Yeah,
so, at least getting something for the money
shot.
There.
So, the sisters listed a handful of problems with Club Allure, but here's the best one. Here's my favorite. They want the place shut down because it leads to women walking around, quote, alone or in groups, with or without accompanying males, end quote. So they're complaining about women being in public, but only if they're in groups of one or many, and only if they have or have not male chaperones. That's the rules they're going with. So you can have groups of zero with hermaphrodite chaperones. That's allowed. Otherwise, no women.
They also took issue in their complaint with them getting beer deliveries and heavy trucks. But I swear, it was worth reading the entire complaint just for the visual image of one of the nuns having to go out each morning to clean the used condoms off the sidewalk. I loved it.
It's a
little habit.
And you know what that means is they have to have like a dedicated pincer for that exact purpose. Like, on site. They're not going to get a new one.
Hanging on a little nail by the door.
Sitting there in the corner somewhere. It's an awkward thing everybody has to walk past every once in a while. Now, it must have been a fun scene, though, when the nuns walked over to the strip club to lodge their original complaints. Everybody in the place so sure these women are about to get on stage. Enormous tease when they don't. But you gotta admit, there's a great business idea in this. So I'm suggesting the two parties bury the hatchet wound and get together on a combo enterprise. So to help him out, let's go ahead and put 30 seconds on the clock as we discussed. Ideas for the strip club convent, obviously. Go.
Obviously. St. Dahl's Cathedral, home of the Padres Cadre.
Satin dolls in placing Sopranos and in real life. I've heard. I'm not sure.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Never. All right. What about 77 Nunset Strip?
Nice. Obviously, we need some kind of like a ruler across the knuckle based S&M club. So how about the School Marm Harm Farm?
Jack-offs of all trades, masturbators of none. Support the habit.
Or kick the habit.
Well done. Much better. What about Hooters Pooters and Sunday School Tutors? I'd go there. CCTV.
Our Lady of the Hosiery? Or if it's a low-budget place, it could be the Yeast of Our Lady of the Hosiery.
Oh, God.
It would be appropriate, though, because it's Catholic and... And a yeast infection is just reverse transubstantiation. You know, it's body into bread, so it's almost Catholic already.
That's how I learned it at Sunday school. What about the booby trap at Single Mother Superiors?
Nice.
With the abortion scars.
Episcopal dancing? Where the Holy See goes to see the Holy?
Episcopalians. Nice. Sisterhood of the Traveling Implants.
Basilicone implants.
Obviously. How about a sleazy ass tease? I mean, who wouldn't want to see a donkey slash nun show? That's gold, entertainment gold. It's going to put asses in the seats and the stage.
Yeah, right.
Good
right.
stuff.
I got to say, I admit, I saw that written out and I had no idea where you were going. How about the titty twister sister fister? Where Mr. Krister kissed her blister.
It's important you got blistered at the end. Pussier joke. Pussier jokes are funnier. All right, what about the tits and Asherah pole?
Nice.
That's all I got. That's all nice. I got. I'm done. I tapped.
That's perfect. It's got the pole in it and everything. And we'll end on some good news for a change tonight. From the One Dar Two Wins file, the UK has officially banned the teaching of creationism as science in any school that receives public funds. Hooray. Of course, for a country that until recently had Chuck D on their money, this might seem a little late in coming, but better late than never, as the British national motto clearly states.
Yeah, they eventually came around on disliking the Nazis, but, you know, appeased for a little. The first few weeks, they're pretty polite hosts, but finally something had to be said, you know, subtle and politely, but something.
Don't mean to be rude.
Think you could go ahead and stop occupying us for now? We're going to tell the Americans. We'll tell them.
Don't make us go get our former colonies. Now, the change comes as part of a newly reworded funding agreement between the British government and schools receiving tax revenue. And the sections about creationism are so good, I wish I'd written them for a diatribe. In just a couple of paragraphs, they completely dismantle all the major claims of creationism. They label it pseudoscience and point out that even most religious people think that it's bullshit.
That's the thing. British churches should be happy about this, honestly. This clear defeat, it's actually kind of an honor. Think of all the absurd accommodations they must be getting for this shit to be necessary.
Yeah, good point.
You shouldn't need a rule about each specific wrong thing that you shouldn't do. That's ridiculous. Think of how many rules that would be. You don't need a rule that says, don't blow tobacco smoke up a drowning victim's ass with an enormous anal bellows instead of going straight to rescue resuscitation. That's not a necessary rule. That's crazy.
Well, if I could have ended the headline segment on the image of the giant anal bellows, and I didn't, I'd probably never forgive myself. So, Heath, thanks as always.
Fire up the bong bong. That's how we do.
David from the My Book of Mormon podcast will be here in a bit to compare shitty holy books. But before we get to that, I want to hand things over to my lovely wife, Lucinda, for a new segment that the headlines have been begging us to add for quite a while.
A man wrote the Bible.
A whore is what she was.
If it's a legitimate rape.
If it's a slut, right?
Cooking can be fun.
Hey, I'm proud of a man.
This week in misogyny.
Bad news, ladies. It turns out that our secret is out. The guys are now well aware of how much we love getting raped. Now, clearly, we should have seen this rape whistleblower coming, because who knows more about the desires of college-aged women than a geriatric conservative who's been impotent since the Nagano Olympics? That's right. Conservative columnist George Will spilled the beans on our beans in a column that claimed that being a sexual assault victim was, quote, a coveted status on today's college campuses. So if you are a victim of sexual assault, be sure to email George about where to collect your consolation prizes and your 50 shekels. I think it's also safe to say that George is coveting rape victimhood. And I only mention this in case the girl with the dragon tattoo is listening. But one way or the other, the pussy's out of the bag now. Our secret love of sexual victimhood is a matter of public record. Now, I'm sure there are some women out there that will say, no, George, we don't covet sexual assault. But I think we all know what women really mean when they say no. But if you still insist that you're not a fan of being raped, at least we know who to blame for it now. And it turns out it's not the rapist. It's Charles Darwin. As creationist douchebag Derek Isaac explained on Creation Today last week, if evolution is true, it's all just about men propagating their genes. He ends with what he thinks is a rhetorical question, quote, if evolution is true, is rape wrong? And the rhetorical answer is, yes, you misogynistic fuckwart. And finally, proving that you don't need a penis to be a sexist, we bring you the story of mommy blogger Laura something or another at the Apples and Band-Aids blog. She reminds all of us ladies to be ashamed of our bodies this beach season in a post called My Husband Doesn't Need to See Your Boobs. In the article, she explains that apparently her husband is some kind of undomesticated, raging pervert that dives erection first into anything with visible cleavage. So, I'd like to close by pointing out to Laura that I don't need to see your husband's asshole either. So please, take your picture off your blog. That's all the misogyny I have for you this week, but I'm sure there's more to come. And remember, guys, we outnumber you.
Diatribes Volume 1, 50 Essays from a Godless Misanthrope, is already being called the greatest work of nonfiction in the modern age. And now I'm calling it an earth-shattering literary achievement. But never mind what I have to say, let's hear what the Amazon reviewers are saying.
Only had this about 6 months and the roller brush seized up, which caused the belt to continue spinning and almost caught the vacuum cleaner on fire. Really bad design on the roller brush.
After putting batteries in the device, it did not vibrate. What a waste of money. If it were thicker, maybe I could use it as a dildo.
The Hutzler 571 Banana Slicer changed my sex life.
And now let's hear what they have to say about Diatribes Volume 1, 50 Essays from a Godless Misanthrope.
A sharply written and well-reasoned book. It acts both as a great companion to the podcast and also as a standalone commentary on the state-of-the-art stupidity we're exposed to every day.
The authors present familiar arguments in a new and irreverent way that is refreshing after all the books, blogs, and podcasts that try to walk the line between arguing and offending.
This book skewers the pretensions of the pious in a way that is viscerally satisfying, laugh-out-loud funny, and profoundly truthful.
Highly recommended for anyone that has a brain or is considering getting one.
So pick up your paperback or digital copy today by following the links at skatingatheist.com. Diatribes Volume 1, 50 Essays from a Godless Misanthrope. Because I've only said the name of the book twice, and the marketing guys say you should say it at least 3 times. It occurred to me recently that I've already written songs for Genesis, Exodus, and Leviticus, and thanks to our friend C. Webb from the C. Webb Sunday School podcast, my Joshua poem has also been musicalized. And since we have a little more time to fill these days, I figure I would be remiss not to fill in the gap, so without further ado, I offer you the musical version of a poem I wrote for one of the Bible's wackiest books, Numbers.
Well, one is the number of gods and he gives. Two shits about who gets killed and who lives. Well, 3 times Balaam and his donkey had spats before God starts talking out that Midianite sass. 5 chapters in, it gets scary for chicks. 6 stuff's prescribed if you get inside dick. Well, 7's for rest, and unless you need stones to break a stick, gathering heathens' motherfucking bones. His motherfucking bones. Ate too much manna, should you voice your critiques? God will plague you, but he'll send quail for weeks. That asinine bastard might invoke some damn clause and show you what a tenuous promise that promised land really was. Well, 11 tribes conscribe all their fighting age men, but the 12th tribe, the Levites, they just carry the tents. 20 is war age, but like most things you'll notice that the tribe that's exempt is the one that has Moses. 'Cause Moses is a pussy. And I mean that in a bad way. 30 days mourning, God kills Aaron on high, and then 40 years waiting for all the badgers to die. 50% of the book we spend bored counting Jews and the booty that they offer up to the Lord. We get a couple of censuses from all of the tribes. Enumerated offerings are in detail described. As the name would suggest, this book's obsessed with amounts, but no number gets higher than God's body count. 'Cause God is a psychopathic bastard.
Thank you. When I first heard the melodious timbre of my next guest's voice, I immediately urged him to get into the podcasting business. In fact, I told him with a voice like that, I could listen to him read the phone book. Now, I said this as a joke, because phone book was the most boring thing I could think of offhand, but apparently he took it as a challenge and astonishingly found something that makes the phone book look like the Game of Thrones. So a few months ago, he started a new podcast called My Book of Mormon, where he's tackling one of the most insane collections of sentences ever crafted by human hands, or, if you believe the book, ever carved by angelic hands. So, first of all, David, welcome to The Scathing Atheist.
Thank you for having me, Noah.
All right, right up front here, in the interest of full disclosure, are you now or have you ever been a Mormon?
I am not yet a Mormon. I haven't finished the book. Maybe it'll sway me. And no, I have never been. So far, it's not looking too good for me.
All right. So why their holy book that you've chosen to pick on?
Well, it was process of elimination, quite frankly. So I was inspired by Thomas Smith with Thomas in the Bible, thought what he was doing was great and said, well, you know what? There's a lot more out there. And so I said, hey, I'll tackle the Quran. So I actually recorded first two episodes of my reading of the Quran, and I was wondering to myself, how in the world am I going to finish this? This is so boring. And so, but then I was listening to your show, actually, and you mentioned this new podcast, Quranify Me, and I looked it up and said, okay, missed that window. So I just looked and said, what else is out there? And I picked this one. And I'll tell you, I just feel so lucky because this book is so much more fun to read than the Bible or the Quran. It's just packed full of insanity.
And yeah, so I've listened to your first couple episodes, and I'm jealous, honestly. We're stuck with the Bible, and then we're going to do the Quran after that, so we got a while before we get to this insanity.
Well, it'll be your dessert, because it is fun stuff.
Now, have you read the prequel, the Bible?
Yes, I have. I have read the Bible. I mean, I don't know that I was as diligent as you are, quite frankly. You know, you actually read Psalms instead of the first three and said, well, this is just repeating itself, next chapter. So, I mean, the fact that you actually wrote a tweet about every single Psalm, I thought was like, man, he's not kidding. He's really reading this.
I something had to come of that. I should get a prize at the end of that one, but I didn't. Now, I haven't, of course, read the Book of Mormon yet, but they did make it into a Broadway musical, and I did see that. So I can tell you that, spoiler alert, the fuck frog bit in Act 3 is hilarious of that book. But to frame this conversation, give us an idea. About how far along are you in the book so far?
I think I'm about a quarter of the way done, maybe a little less than that. 23-24%, I think, is what the e-reader tells me.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm about a quarter of the way.
Now, let me ask you, this may not be possible. Like I said, I'm not too familiar with the book yet, but could you give us like a Reader's Digest recap of the main plot points? What's going on in the Book of Mormon so far?
All right. So we have most of what we've read so far is in kind of the Old Testament type of King Jamesy type writing. Mm-hmm. So we go all the way back to 600 BC with a fellow named Lehi who had a bunch of dreams, was convinced that these were messages from God. And basically, you know, told all of his friends and neighbors they were evil and they were all, you know, just abominations. So they kicked him out of town. And, you know, what do you do when you get kicked out of Jerusalem? You build a boat and you go to America. So he brought his whole family with him. And they started some tribes in the U.S. So
that
right
is
now
a hell of a boat they had. Wow. In 600 BC, huh?
Well, God gave him a compass to help.
Oh, that
so
helps.
That was nice because those were around then, too. So then, so right now we're reading about all of the fun little warrings going on between the tribes that have descended from this original patriarch of Lehi. So gotcha. That's where we are. But the book actually started with it almost started with the end, right? So the book starts with the story of Joseph Smith and how he found these plates, or how this angel came from heaven and told him that there were these lost, you know, gospel of Jesus Christ, and he had to go find it and translate it. That in and of itself, I can't do it justice. If you want to hear that, listen to the first episode. It blew my mind away how insane that was.
I will tell the audience, it made me laugh out loud several times. And not even just your interjections, which were great, but just the text itself is fucking hilarious through that. So how would you compare it to the Bible so far? More insane, less insane?
Well, it's hard to say because I was raised with the Bible. So I was raised in a very Christian home. And so if I had never, and I actually said this once during an episode, if I'd never read the Bible before, like if somehow you were on some deserted island and just didn't know that there was a Bible or Christianity and picked it up and started reading it, you would probably think it was just as batshit crazy as the Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. But because you're raised with it, it seems normalized. So the, like Noah's Ark story, right? You're used to seeing the little giraffes poking their head out in the cartoons. And so it just didn't seem that weird until you're an adult and think back and go, that is absolute just insanity. Like that could not have happened. Why did I ever believe that?
There is an amazing amount of
batshit crazy in the very first book of the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
There's probably more crazy in Genesis than there are in the next, like, seven books put together.
So, yeah, and as you pointed out, with you reading it, there's several of the stories have elements that you never learned as a kid, like the end of the Noah story.
Right.
Like they land on the mountain, the dove, and they build an altar, and everything's great. And it's like, no. Then there's this drunken nakedness and someone being shamed. You're like, what the hell was that?
Right. All the kids know about Lot's wife turning to salt, but then that's pretty much all of that story they know as well. So.
Yeah, then they don't get to hear about the daughters raping dad. Yeah, funny
or
that they left
the
that
prequel
part, out.
Part where the daughters are offered up for rape to the other angels. But we're getting onto the wrong book here. What I find really fascinating about the Book of Mormon compared to the Bible is that we know the Bible's wrong, but we can absolutely prove that the Book of Mormon is fake. Joseph Smith, convicted con artist. His wife publicly shows him to be a fraud while he's translating his golden plates. He again shows himself publicly to be a fraud when he's completely incapable of actually translating Egyptian writing. It makes verifiably false claims like Native Americans being lost Jews. The authenticity of this book is an open and shut case. This is an absolute positive scam. And yet there are over 5 million people in this country alone that buy this as the word of God. Wait, this was supposed to be a question. Hold on. Let me questionize this. Okay, I got it. What the fuck is up with Mormons, in your semi-professional opinion?
So I'll tell you, my listening audience has the show really has been a great big success because of the ex-Mormon community. So I honestly didn't even know that was a thing, right? I had no, and I certainly didn't know how large it was. But there are a lot of people that were indoctrinated into this religious worldview at birth and turned on their brain at some point in their life and said, exactly what you just said. None of this is true.
Right.
So they've been kind of the best. Actually, we have a term for them. So in the ex-Mormon community, they have all these little words that they use. So like TBM means true believing Mormon. They call themselves Exmos, right? And there's tons of them, all these different. So we actually decided that a listener to the show is called a MIMO. So now we have a group of MIMOs that listen. Someone just recently suggested maybe we should be MIMOites because, you know, in the book, the Nephites become the Nephites and the Lamans become the Lamanites. Anyway, so that group has really helped me understand the answer to that question better. And I think really the answer is it's the power of indoctrinating children.
Right.
It's really, that's where it is. You can convince a kid of just about anything. And if you continue to reinforce it, and especially in areas like Utah or what they call the Mormon corridor, it's, you're surrounded by it. You don't escape it. It's literally everywhere. In high school, public high schools, they for a certain amount of time in the afternoon, they say, okay, everyone has to go to seminary now. And they just go across the street to church, to seminary class, right? I mean, it's just the whole culture is surrounded with this. And so it becomes a very painful act to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you just walk away from. People they could lose their job. They could get kicked out of school. They could, you know, family members might not talk to them again. So it's not only, it's very insulated. So you're indoctrinated into something and then you're insulated against the rest of the world. One listener actually emailed me and said that he was 19 years old before he realized that there were people that didn't believe it, that there were non-Mormons.
Right.
19. He had no idea that anyone on earth was a non-Mormon. That just blew my mind.
An ex-Mormon roommate in New York, and he told me the one thing that really frustrated him about his Mormon education, he was from Utah, he said, is that they don't even tell you that the rest of the world thinks you're batshit crazy. So he goes to New York and does, and when people say, you know, like they start talking religion, he's like, ah, well, you know, I'm a Mormon, and people would go, you're a fucking what? And he had no idea. Like you say, if it's normalized around you, you just never have a reason to question, well, of course, that Moroni came to Joseph Smith and, wow, that's some crazy shit. Anyway, now, as I'm sure you know, because I learned this on your podcast, the Book of Mormon is only one third of the Mormon canon. Well, one fourth if you count the Bible, and they do. But also included are the Doctrine and Covenants and the Pearl of Great Price. Do you have any plans of tackling them as well? Or?
Yes, I'm absolutely going to tackle them.
Awesome.
I'm in. Yeah, and I've been warned that the Doctrines and Covenants may not be as fun because it's just like a list of kind of bullet revelations. But I think we'll make it fun. We actually – I was very warned against the Isaiah chapters, as they were called. There's actually jokes within the Mormon community about how nobody can actually read 2 Nephi cover to cover because it's just – it's so boring, right?
Uh-huh.
And what was the one joke? Someone had the Book of Mormon in their pocket and they were in a battlefield and they got shot in the chest, but it – And he pulled it and he said, oh, are you okay? And he pulled his book out and said, not even a bullet can get through Second Nephi. So anyway, it's just like this. But I actually had a lot of fun with it, right? So I imagine that for the people reading it looking for spiritual meaning, okay, that I get it. I get why you'd be bored to death because it wouldn't make any sense. But if you just read it and call out what it's saying, it's actually pretty fun. So I had a lot of fun reading those Isaiah chapters because it was God was like he turned evil. He just started burning everybody.
Oh, good.
It was.
I hate it when in the sequels they soften the bad guy, you know, Darth Vader turns out to be Luke's father, or Hannibal Lecter becomes the lovable good guy. Yeah, awesome.
Or let's compare Jesus of the New Testament to God of the Old Testament, right? So they went old school. They went old school God.
Good.
And it was a lot of fun. There was some serious smiting going on. It was great.
What's the craziest thing you've come across God doing so far?
Oh, it's probably the craziest thing God doing. Well, so recently we had this parable that there was an olive tree in this vineyard and God was, it was like his favorite olive tree. So I think it was supposed to be like Israel was the tree. Mm-hmm. And so no matter what he did, it kept just like turning bad. It would grow evil fruit, whatever the hell that is. And, so he just kept trying these new things. He was grafting different branches in it. He tried planting branches in different places. No matter what he did, it just kept getting bad again. And so then he finally said, all right, we're going to take one more stab at this. Like he was telling these servants he had, we're going to try and if we can get this tree back, great. But if it turns evil again, I'm burning it all, just lighting it all on fire. And I was like, well, there's a good attitude. So that's kind of the God of the Bible. He's like, the Book of Mormon. He's like, I'm going to give it the old college try, but if it fails, we're lighting that sucker on fire. And so, yeah, that one I thought was, I was like, even if you believe this is true, that's the kind of God you want to believe in. He's an asshole.
Right.
I don't know how else to say it. So yeah, that was pretty good.
Good answer. Now here's one I always like to ask newer podcasters. If you could go back in time a couple months, give yourself some advice before you started this thing, other than, you know, stock tips or lottery numbers or whatever, what would you tell yourself?
I think I waited too long before I actually like uploaded it. So I thought it was a better idea to have 5 or 6 episodes done and post it all at once so that when you kind of make the show a show, it, you know, hits. But the, you know, once it went kind of viral within the ex-Mormon community, the vibe of the show changed, right? Because it went from me just thinking this would be something that people would find entertaining or funny, right? Just as someone can laugh along. And then I started getting these emails from people that say, I don't believe any of this is true, but there's nothing I can do about it. I'm trapped, right? And they started saying this podcast is therapy for me. It's like really helps me. He's like, I've been living with guilt because I couldn't get myself to believe. And this is reinforcing that, no, I'm right, you know?
Right on.
So that really kind of changed my motivation around it. And if that had happened earlier, I think if you listen to like the episodes 8, 9, 10 and going forward, it feels different because my motivation for doing it is very different. I never dreamed that this would help people, right?
Right.
Like I just thought it would just be something that people would find funny. And so knowing that there's people out there that are using this to cope with the life that they're or the position that they're in their life it's humbling for me. And so it makes me really, it's the drive to keep going on. And so sometimes when I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I can do 2 this week, I'll get some email from someone that's just breaks my heart to read. And I'm like, okay, I'm doing another one, you know?
Yeah. That's damn motivating to keep doing it. Once you find out that people are listening to it,
yeah, it's
makes
amazing
a huge
how that works.
Difference. Now, very much like our show, early on, you started getting people saying, how can I support your show? Do you have a PayPal account or whatever that we can offer donations? Now, when that happened to us, we said, shit, yeah, you can give us money all you want. But you proved yourself to be a slightly more noble fella than Heath and myself. Can you tell our audience about what you're doing there?
Well, yeah, first of all, the irony of podcasting is the more successful you get, the more it costs. So I will admit the expenses are higher than I thought they would be because I didn't anticipate the show being as successful as it is. Glad that it is. So
right.
I think I will probably have to change that once I'm done. I'm committing that I will foot the bill for this one. So the Book of Mormon, but once we get into Pearl Great Price, Doctrines and Covenants, I think I might then have suddenly a
people
donate,
should definitely appear. Have to get paid to listen
right.
to read that crap. I'm with
yeah.
you.
So anyway, but for this one, what I said to the people that were, I really wanted to find a way to do more than just the podcast to help those people that were reaching out to me saying that they were trapped. So I did some research, asked around, and I found this organization called Whitefields Educational Foundation. And it's a nonprofit company that helps people transition out of religion.
Oh, awesome.
They started in Salt Lake City, so they're very good with the whole Mormon cult sect thing that's going on there. So they've been able to – so they do it through therapy. And even the John Larson, who's the – what's his name? Chairman or something. Managing director, whatever he's called. He actually came on the show and we talked. And some of the advice that he gave people, like, everyone feels like they're in a hurry. Right. And you can do this slowly. You've got the rest of your life. And so some of the advice that he gave on how to come to terms with the fact that you've lost your faith, and there's nothing wrong with that. So what we decided to do is to set up a scholarship, and it's actually called the Taylor Scholarship. There was a girl named Taylor that her email to me really just really touched me in a way that I decided to name it after her. And so donations made to the Taylor Scholarship actually will cover the cost of these services. So it's a nonprofit company, so they're not making money, but it does, you know, cost money for the facilities and right. the counselors and the therapists. And so, yeah, we've set up the scholarship. And so for people that don't have the means but do need the help are going to be able to get those services paid for.
Excellent, dude. That's awesome that you're doing that. And, of course, we'll have that linked on the show notes for this episode. If you want, after we're done recording, you can show me on this doll where her email touched you. Now, if you want to experience David's reading for yourself, that too will be linked on the website at scathingatheist.com. I really do recommend it. Consistently makes me laugh out loud. So thanks so much for joining us, David.
Not a problem, Noah. I'll come back anytime.
And thanks also for the yeoman's work you're doing. And when we come back, Heath will rejoin me to offend more people that we're trying to apologize to.
What the fuck is Baha'i?
The cold sore to Islam's genital herpes, Baha'i is a diacritically perplexing faith that began in the mid-19th century when Iranian slacker Sayyid Ali Muhammad realized that claiming to speak for God was a pretty good racket. He took the name The Bab, which means the gate, and declared himself the 12th Imam of Shia Islam in 1844, which worked out well until his public execution in 1850. Before his death, The Bab had amassed thousands of followers who took the impossibly to take seriously moniker of Babis. A brief schism between the remaining Babis ended with one Mizrah Hussein Ali Nouri in charge, who then chose the humble title of Glory of God, or Baha'u'llah. Since then, by most measures, Baha'i has been the fastest-growing religion in the world, quickly spreading to over 200 nations. Take that, Mormons. Baha'i was considered a very progressive faith for the mid-19th century, and even now it's considered very progressive for the mid-19th century. The belief is founded on three main principles, all of which are unwavering, eternal, and cast aside in a heartbeat if it conveniences the propagation of the faith. The first is the unity of God. Baha'i is a monotheistic religion that employs the familiar cop-out that all the religions are worshiping the same God in different and often directly contradictory ways. This leads to the second founding principle, the unity of religion, which is essentially the same thing, but you can't just have two founding principles, or you'll look like an asshole. Like the Muslim and Christians before them, they accept the divine status of other Abrahamic prophets, and again, like Muslims and Christians, they believe that their prophet was the bestest and the lastest. The gist of their teachings is that all the religions are true, but Baha'i is the most true. The final principle is the unity of humanity, a firm and founding belief that all humans are created equal, regardless of faith, race, and culture, unless they're gay. There is a strong focus in Baha'i on gender equality, which is shown clearly by how many of their holy buildings look like nipples or vaginas. They focus a large amount of their charitable work towards the empowerment of women through early education. This mission is no doubt paramount to the Council of Nine that runs the religion. In fact, they're so dedicated to gender equality that they may eventually consider allowing women to serve on said council, but for now, a scrotum remains a prerequisite. Baha'i also pays lip service to the compatibility between faith and science, though their failure to voluntarily disband and stop praying shows this to be as hollow as the gender equality thing. Baha'i is usually represented by a nine-pointed star, as all the good numbers of points on a star had been taken by 1844. It's the 13th largest religion in the world, resting between Judaism and Jainism, but if it continues to grow at the pace it's been growing over the last century, it could supplant Korean dictator worship as the 10th largest religion in the world as early as the year 2268. Because of its focus on equality and relatively progressive stance on gender roles, the faith's adherents like to present themselves as the atheist-friendly alternative to other world religions, and hopefully armed with the knowledge that their all-male universal house of justice still condemns both premarital sex and homosexuality, you have all the facts necessary to call them on their bullshit when they do. It's
time for the part of the show that comes next, listener feedback. This is the few minutes we set aside with increasing frequency now that the show's an hour long to answer some of the emails and tweets that we get each week. Now we're going to start off with a little bit of international flair this week as our first email comes from España.
Miguel the Angry Spaniard writes to say, in episode 70 of your podcast, you made fun of the ancient Spanish custom of trampling infants. Is that the best you can come up with? Really? He then goes on to list a series of far more bizarre Spanish Easter traditions, including the Spanish festival of KKK members in backless robes doing street BDSM, the Spanish festival of shaking the fuck out of a poorly ballasted shrine en masse, and the Spanish festival of forcing terrified children to climb human pyramids on top of mountains. So,
yes.
We missed a few.
And sent us video links for all of these. These really exist. So, yeah, Miguel, I am sorry that we so grossly underestimated the batshit insanity of the Spanish national character won't happen again.
Insanity. I have to admit, I'd never expected an Inquisition from there. That was unexpected. Nobody would have ever.
Now, our next email comes from Elena, and it's a bit more on the serious side. She wrote to tell us about a tragic accident that took the lives of two of her atheist friends and nearly took the lives of their two daughters. Next, of course, comes the chorus of God's plans and I'll pray for you half measures and bullshit. But, of course, when the financial reality for these two girls sets in, the people who are so ready to pray for them are left saying, well, shame they didn't belong to a church or something that could help them out. Anyway, Elena has set up a fundraiser on GoFundMe.com, and she's reached out to the secular community for help. I happen to know that we have a damn generous audience that's way better than a church at times like this, so I thought I'd share the link to the fundraiser and some more information on the website and the show notes for this episode at ScathingAtheist.com.
And as usual, I'm not allowed to add commentary to segments like this, so just go ahead and cut me off at any time when you get a chance.
Yeah, no,
and just, I
the somber ones are Heath-free. And if you listen to our friends over at the Cognitive Dissonance podcast, you may have noticed that they, too, have a listener named Elena that recently lost two friends in a similar accident and started a similar GoFundMe campaign for similar reasons. I just wanted to strongly urge you to give money to our Elena and not theirs. Again, skatingatheist.com.
And finally, we have an email from Hannah, who is a big fan of the show, that wonders if we've ever noticed that in 70 episodes, we've never interviewed a female guest. She closes the email by urging us to, quote, get on that shit, end quote. So,
yeah.
Like her style.
Okay, so, first of all, yes, we have noticed, and yes, it's really bad, and yes, we should get on that shit. All that being said, there are two mitigating factors that I want to point out that slightly soften the apparent sexism here. The first is it's not like we've interviewed 70 people or anything. We've had 70 episodes, but we only have guests on about a quarter of them, so it's only 18 interviews, which is it's still bad. It's just not as bad as 70.
Well, plus, I interviewed a girl last summer at camp. So she lives a few towns over. Don't even bother checking on the details.
Yeah, you guys don't know her.
Count as an actual one. Counts.
Also, and this is kind of the story of my life, but I've been turned down by a lot of women. I'm not going to name any names because that's just not classy, but we've been turned down by more than a few prominent female atheists that we would like to have had on the show. So if every potential guest that I'd ever contacted came on the show, we'd have interviewed way more than zero women.
Why is it that women don't like our rape jokes?
Well, that should help our cause, Heath. Thanks.
That's what I'm here for. And that does it for feedback. If you want more, send us more emails, tweets, Facebook messages, and for fuck's sake, somebody issue us a fatwa already.
Yeah, exactly. Get on it, shit. Before we rinse and spit tonight, I wanted to thank everyone who took the time to give us some feedback on the new format. So far, it's been all positive, but by all means, keep the comments coming. Obviously, we tried out some new stuff this week, so let us know what you think and help us make the most out of the hour of your life you're giving us every week. I should also mention that we do read every email that comes in, even if we don't have time to respond to all of them. Just know that when you don't get a reply, it's not like prayer. Someone is listening. Anyway, that's all the blasphemy we have for you this week, but we'll be back in 168 hours with more. Between now and then, you can get your fix of Scatheism on our Facebook page, our blog, or you can follow us on Twitter. That's at @Noah_illusions, L-U-G-E-O-N-S. And if you follow at Heath Enright, E-N-W-R-I-G-H-T, you get to see a picture of Heath's gaping starfish. I'll just leave it there. Also, we'll be posting some guest blogs at scathingatheist.com starting this week, so be sure to check that out. If you'd like to submit an article for consideration, by all means, do that. And if you know an atheist blogger that could use a little more publicity, let us know, let them know, whatever you have to do, we'll work something out. Of course, I need to thank Heath for kicking double the ass again tonight. I need to thank the lovely Lucinda for going above and beyond the call of duty. Obviously, I need to thank David from My Book of Mormon for giving us some of his time this week. Again, really well done podcast. You should definitely check that out. Head over to scathingatheist.com. There'll be a link for you there. I also need to thank Bobby and Ashley from the No Religion Required podcast for providing this week's Farnsworth quote. And while we're on the subject, I want to thank Ashley for lending her voice to the atheist movement by joining Bobby as his co-host. Glad to have you in the Atheist Podcasting Club. Of course, you'll find their show linked on the show notes as well. But most of all, of course, I need to thank this week's most seductive simians, Andrew, Stephen, Brian, Amanda, Dan, Michael, Jeff, Ginny, Robert, Duff, James, Alexi, Elvin, and Rob. Andrew, Stephen, and Brian, whose erections could be used to resupply the ISS. Amanda, Dan, Michael, and Jeff, whose combination of speed and swordsmanship would fuck the Transformers up even worse than Michael Bay. Ginny, Robert, and Duff, who are so sexy I could masturbate to their footprints. And James, Alexi, Elvin, and Rob, who are so rational even their farts come with citations and complete bibliographical references. These 14 formidably forthright fornicators have fortified our fortunes this fortnight by forking over some money. Not everybody has the courage, pride, and superior sexual organs it takes to give us money, but if you'd like to test your mettle, you can make a per-episode donation at patreon.com/scathingatheist, which you'll find linked at scathingatheist.com, or you can make a one-time donation by clicking the donate button on the right side of our homepage. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. Did I answer some of the...
Miguel the Angry... You made fun of the...
So I thought I'd... grossly underestimated it.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.